there'll be editing going on anyway, like crazy in this recording. So welcome to another episode. I can't remember which one now, it's been so long, on Awakenings. A lot's been happening. Not that much we couldn't record, but life takes you in different directions sometimes. But we'll try to do this, Linda, that we'll do trying to do recording once a week. So three times a week is too much. And then it's just it sort of piles on top, and then you're trying to put pressure on yourself, and it's got to be calculated pressure, not too much. So with other things that we're doing, I feel, yeah, once a week's plenty. The reason for this episode, I was going through some of my old things, drawers and boxes and things that when I moved a number of months ago now, and I came across a book that had poetry in it, because I've been writing poetry off and on since 2000s or 2002 or so, when the first time I went to India. And in this book, I found four poems that is very raw. Some of the things I was going through inspired the book. It took it to a new level in a way, in what I wanted to achieve after getting through my turmoil in a way. It was definitely a catalyst for the book. But I had no idea that I'd written some poetry about some of this stuff. I feel when I found it, I obviously spoke to you, Linda, and said, what do you think about this? And remember, we've been diving into spirituality and discussing things for a number of years now, and expanding understandings and healing and all that sort of thing. Remember when I first read the poetry to you?
Yeah, I got emotional. Got really emotional. Yeah. And I said, you have to put this out there, because I think this is something profound that people can relate to. This is the guts of what people go through before they transform.
Yeah, and you cried, and I had trouble holding back the tears. It's like when you read poetry, which explains or describes the past experiences, you tend to go into that space. You sort of go back into the energy, and it rocked me reading the poetry back. Definitely, we agreed that it should become a part of the book to link the reader and myself. You said to me that you had no idea I went through so much. Because yeah. you wouldn't think so. Speaking to me, no. I'm like pretty upbeat in a sense, and like I don't speak from past or from suffering or anything like that. I'm an extreme optimist, and it's hard. Yeah. People might think how, like, if they knew my past, they could easily wonder how can you go from this place to that place, and that's the whole point of the book.
I've never before seen that side of you.
Yeah. Well, many wouldn't, but I feel that it's important to. For people to know that I've gone through deep suffering myself. Yep. And come out the other side. So I'm not speaking from a place of theory. I was coming from a place of experience, from being in the depths of darkness, or so it feels, and how you can claw your way out. And so there's four poems, which I've added to the end of chapter three, which is Roughest Seas. I sent this to a friend of mine that studied psychology, and that helps people through sort of government bodies, and I wanted someone impartial as well to get an idea, because he helps people all the time in dealing with the family matters and that sort of thing. So I forward on the poetry just for, because everything, we're pretty synchronized. What I talk about, you go, you're sort of on the same page. So I wanted someone that is not so connected to me, that helps people all the time to see, get a sense of the impact. He's been in this for quite a number of years, said that unfortunately, a lot of people would identify with what I'm saying. It would, and he said that the four poems, I put them in the order that sort of reflective on the journey of stages you go through, where the first one's very raw, which is not so descriptive, but it has it's absolute rawness about it. It's interesting, because I'm going on a podcast today with a friend of mine, and he said to choose four songs, and one of those songs was Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight. And I think that's always been a powerful song. For me, it has. And I saw an interview with Phil Collins, and there's a story behind the song that a guy witnessed a boy fall into the ice and drown and didn't do anything about it. And Phil Collins invited him to a concert, or gave him a ticket also, and basically shone a light on him during that song. He got back at the guy and you know, you hear he got bashed at the concert and because he witnessed this boy die and didn't try and do anything. And in the interview, I said to Phil Collins, you know, is it true? And he says, no, it's not. He said, unfortunately, in some ways, he's not callous or anything, but he said, it's not true. He said, what's the inspiration of the song? And he said, well, it's like I was talking, you know, when you talk to the missus and you go, oh, don't hang up, and they hang up. And they go, oh, if you're thinking, F you, and you just react because the rawness of the breakup is at the forefront of your mind. And it's like, stuff, I've been waiting for this moment all of my life. Or, you know, like it's all these mixed feelings, but it's raw. That's sort of that place in a sense is where my first poem comes from. That poem was coming from a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, which will be evident, and I'll read it soon. Just on a side note before I read this poem, backtrack a little bit. So these four poems, it's, as my friend said, he said, it takes you on a journey from the rawness to trying to work it out to sort of opening up to some degree to a calling almost. Yeah. And I said, yeah, I'll put in that order specifically because it's not that I was doing that when I was writing it. When you write, you just write. But it's a journey within a journey. It's a story within the story of these four poems. And it's pretty long. Like two of them are very long. But if you're on the verge of being emotional or trying to seek understanding towards the end of chapter three, reading the poetry will just pull you into that. And I expect it will most likely bring up quite a bit more emotions. If you're on the edge, it will take you over. And I think that's important because you have to crack that case and that pool of emotion has to spill out a bit to certain degrees. Sometimes you need to just need a massive sob. Then you've vented enough and you're open to the possibility of a further understanding. And that's why I've added the poems to the book, because it's like, well, okay, it's not just theory. This is actually, I mentioned at the end of chapter three that it's what I wrote. So it's what I've experienced. And I feel that's very important because it is an experience. It's not theory, what I've written. It's my understanding. It's what I've discovered through a lot of heartache, a lot of self-searching and spending time in India and letting go of everything that I thought I knew, because the thoughts, the ideas, everything I thought I knew, I feel that when you're suffering and you can't shed your suffering, then what you know is not enough or it's limiting. I truly believe, I know that if you're encased and locked in suffering, then subtly or not so subtly, you are repeating patterns in your mind that's maintaining your suffering. You have to take on something new. You have to let go of something. You have to deepen your understanding of self. You have to get out of your head. And it's interesting. I'm doing a Mums and Dads Forever program through family court that Alex and I agreed on. I've done it before and I don't mind doing it because this is my passion. So I try not to talk too much because every time, you know, they'll say sometimes, anyone think of anything to do with a certain topic, and they go, Shane, just wait for a second. I go, no, it's okay. So it's like I've got plenty to say and through experience. And so that it's hard because this could run deep. Like this could be a course for a year. Like if I was running it, I'd like to do something like that, and that's not realistic. So it's an 8-week course, and they talk about things are basically, you know, the patterns and certain things, it's food for thought, and it helps you unravel things in your mind when you're suffering, and it gives a different, broader perspective. But there's things like they can't cover everything because it's too short a course. And there was a section in the course where said, you know, you have the parent, then the adult, then the child, and you go through different modes. The parent, there's aspects where you're controlling, maybe nurturing, loving. There's the adult where you're focused more on self, talking about it more so to some degree, the egoic self. So you're self-centered and it's like your priority in a way. And then you've got the child where you can be spontaneous, almost innocent, or you don't really have a sense of responsibility. So the three aspects of the psyche, parent, adult, and child, as I was mentioning. So what they're saying is that as an adult, you can swing from the parent to the adult to the child within yourself. And if you're the parent, you're responsible for not just yourself, but maybe your partner. The child aspect is prevalent in certain adults, then you're not really responsible. You're letting the other person can take control. And they said, okay, so in this place, one parent, and in most relationships, as we know, one person winds up becoming the parent and one person's, you know, and it can swing. But generally, there's a pattern set up where one person's dominant. And they said, in this place, the parent is the nurturer and controlling things, and the other person's like childlike and not really doing so much, or not really being responsible. And they say, as a matter of fact, this is just how it is. And I said, there's actually another way. So I interjected, as I do often and in these courses. And I said, that it's not just that. The parent can be, or one person in the relationship may be playful and innocent and may not seemingly be fully responsible, but they just might be just playful in a sense. The person that may be the parent may be very insecure, may be controlling, maybe want something from their partner to be loved more, or to be loved in a certain way, or to have a certain type of attention from the other person. So the parent isn't always the nurturer. It could be someone controlling the relationship. And that's been my experiences in certain relationships over the years, where the person dominating is just wanting something from me that I can't necessarily give, or I feel like it's, I guess I'll just leave it at that. So in this, they said that when you break up, what happens is the parent tries to become or stay the parent, and they'll treat the other person like a child. And the person that's the child has to try and get a sense of self and pull themselves up a bit and become more accountable and responsible. And I said in this course, I said, so there is one element here. I said, that's all good. And this is the whole point. In the mind, it's like, yeah, okay, yep, this is the dynamic and it's basically true. But there's all these little tendrils or little attachments that can stop you or restrict you from breaking that pattern. And this is where I feel like with a basic course, they can't go into the nitty gritty, and not that people are necessarily ready for that, because there's a lot of people that are emotional during Mums and Dads Forever programs or any programs to do with breakups. But I said, if there's something missing here, there is one emotion that locks you into any pattern you're in and you cannot escape it. You can't find a balance if you can't break this emotion. And I said, this emotion is resentment. And this is the issue. It's almost like you have to psychoanalyze yourself and get out of the emotional state, but you've got to access some of the emotions to break through new ground. And this is the point of the poetry. So it might seem like it took a bit to get there, but just wanting something isn't enough. You have to tap into the emotion and make something of it. You have to let something go. You have to see your triggers. You have to dive into to what you're resisting or you're harboring in way of emotion that's locking you in the space you're in. And when I mentioned that, there's a guy there that in the course that very soft guy, very loving guy, and got a really nice heart. I sort of picked that from the first time I saw him and the first time he spoke. And I can see him just squinting and trying to get a sense of what I'm saying. You know, when they talk about the mind, I said, you have to access the heart. The mind isn't like it's important, but the power is in the heart. And then it's hard because no one really talks about it because it seems mysterious and it's hard to access. In a way, it can be. I remember my guru years ago saying, you just go to your heart. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? Where's that? How do you do that? I have no clue what that even means. And I used to get frustrated because I know now it's like go to the heart. It's obvious in ways to do that. But when you're hurting and you're going through mind chatter to get out of that, going to the heart, it feels almost impossible. So I get it. I really do. So analogies, and this is where the poetry comes in. It draws you in through getting a sense of, you know, the words in itself. It's describing a place that, when as you read with an open mind, and if you're reading the book, you're seeking for understanding or another perspective at the very least. It draws you into the journey and can show you potentially things within yourself where you might identify with certain feelings of being lost or being frustrated. And I feel that is invaluable, and that's why it's added to the book. And so we're going through the process. Linda's been helping me going through the process with adding the poetry, which shouldn't be far off. We've changed the cover for the book to add the seal and the draft from the publisher in the next day or so. So within a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, you should be able to access the new book, or the updated, the second edition book with the added poetry. If you look it up, and that, if it has the seal on the cover, then you know that everything's changed. It has, it's the new updated version. It's added about 6 pages to the book, the poetry. So, and a little intro to the poetry there at the end of chapter 3. So I was talking to you, Linda, and as we both agree, you suggested that I read two of the poems. Yep. And the first one is in the intro. I read just a little section of the intro before I read the first poem. Okay, so I apologize for the language, but they are original and very raw and reveal the despair and how lost I've felt. I decided to include them below as an inspiration to those who have suffered or are still suffering. Once again, listener's discretion, there's some swearing in it because it is raw. This is how many of us have felt at times. The first poem, Rage. Ah, I want you to shake something, fucking break something. You want to beat me? You can't defeat me. You abuse me, fucking accuse me. You trash my name. The games you play, I'm not to blame. It's just your way. Go fuck yourself is what I say. You've crossed the line and awakened the lion. Now hear me roar and prepare to fall. Feel the fire, you fucking liar. Of the life you've concealed, all will be revealed, I swear. So, very raw. And that just, I remember when I wrote that, it came out in no time. It's just everything I wanted to say. But I didn't say it anyway to anyone. That was for me, you know, and it definitely helped.
I think so many people have gone through and felt that at many times in their life.
Yeah. Writing is an important part of trying to express or discover how you feel. And if you express how you feel, you will discover it. And we need to acknowledge. We can't go, oh, no, no, no. Like, I don't typically swear at all unless I'm telling a joke or something like that. Like, if I have to, like, I don't swear in general conversation at all. But sometimes it's necessary. I feel for sure.
Yeah.
When you're trying to write down and discover or put down what you're feeling, you can't modify it. You can't edit it. It has to be in all its rawness. It really does. So I feel for you have to get it all out there. Yeah, you can't tiptoe. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the first one. Then it goes to another poem, which is called Suffering. But I'm going to read that's the second one. I'm going to read the third one, which is called Inner Turmoil. And then it goes to the fourth poem, which is The Divine. But I'm just going to read the third one. So this is the third process in a sense of it's not intricate in how to break out of it. It's just stages you go through. And there's many stages between that. But this is how I was feeling between the 2009-10 to the start of 2012. This next poem is called Inner Turmoil. For so long I've been wandering these barren lands within me. For so long I have thirsted, swimming in the river of life, so much water all around, yet I'm never quenched. Maybe I do not truly know how to drink. Once again, I happen to an oasis. Once again, I search, not knowing what I'm looking for. A spark of life, a reason to exist, a driving force, through the many miracles I've seen and done. Fearless in adversity, yet fearing myself, surrounded by darkness in a clear blue sky. Waves of emotion hit me, submerge me, swallow me. At times I gulp for air, at times I drift, allowing the darkness within to drag me to the bottom. Alone I sit, wondering when I will return. This place is so familiar, my dark haven. Too deep for many to reach. Nothing here but misery, consumed by darkness. It's afraid to let me go. After many years of service, it fights for its survival. Slowly it feeds from me, sapping my strength. How do I swim to escape with so little fuel? Then I feel it, building within me, a once dormant force of raw, untapped power. Building with every breath, a rage I've suppressed, coursing within my veins, a side of me I feared, now may save me. How can light come from darkness? A raw destructive power leaves fear in its wake and respect, fights for love and truth, a spark of life. The balance is within me. At last I have fight. Now I can be whole. Just so on this, this poem, for me, this is a good thing about the podcast. I can give a little bit more insight into what I've written. Where I've written, then I feel it building within me, a once dormant force of raw untapped power, building with every breath. It's the rawness of survival. That's what I'm talking about there. So it's like it's from breaking through a submissive place in a way where you feel.
From a place of disempowerment.
Yeah, disempowerment, and where you're almost passive. You're very submissive. And that more untapped power, you think, oh, no, it's dark, it's bad, I shouldn't do, you know. It's, sometimes you have to just roar.
Yeah.
So that dark power is like it's something that I, in that space, I felt was negative or bad, then realized that was the savior. So it's not bad, it's not evil. It's a rawness that just lets you just access something, and that can give you the strength to start rising above and breaking through to new ground. So that's the raw destructive power. Leaves fear in its wake. And respect, fight for love and truth, a spark of life. The balance is within me. At last I have fight, now I can be whole. So both extremes, to be dormant and you to be balanced. But knowing they're both there and accessible when you need them, if the situation arises, that's important. And I feel so it really comes down to embracing all sides of yourself and trying, and this is spirituality, trying to master all sides. You don't lose yourself in them, but they become vehicles for a way to express or a sense or to gain a strength of yourself when you need it. That's the reason I added the poetry, to discover or get a sense of what's there and realize it's okay to access certain things at certain times.
It's reclaiming your power, so many people are giving away the power to other people, and it's just ending that cycle and reclaiming it for yourself and using it.
Exactly. You might have been told for years that, oh, this is bad, or you don't realize how much you suppress certain things. And if one person's dominating, you can become really submissive, and that's certainly not a good thing. And then you just think in your own mind, because of certain trauma you've been through, you might blame this part of you that you've never accessed, that you fear, that they fear, and maybe that rawness. And certainly through my experience, I went through a stage where I had to discover that rawness. I was watching things around me and I wasn't happy and I was submissive, and which is hard to believe from the way I am now, but this was a process I had to go through at different stages of my life, or a key stage of my life. And those around me were suffering, and I was so submissive, I wasn't doing much. I wasn't doing enough. And I remember I roared and everyone shat themselves. And yeah, even my kids at the time, and I was for them. I wasn't at them, I was for them in a certain circumstance. So, and there's no regrets there. So my kids and those around me that I care about know that there's a line, and you don't have to be in people's face to show them there's a line. They just know. It's one of those things. You know, if people are pushing the boundaries and you can express yourself, you can access yourself, they will know on some level that they can only push you so far. And the more you stand up and express yourself, so the greater you can access yourself, the greater you can express yourself. And then people know very clearly where the line is, and they stop even testing you. So this is the way forward for a more fulfilled life, is to embrace yourself. And I don't want to get into topic, this maybe another time, but we won't get into this chat gender and stuff like that. But I have a view on that, where it's not about pushing away any aspect of yourself. It's about, this is our bodies are vehicles to sustain and express and process all energies, excluding no energy except for the energies that create harm for yourself or others. But it's a vehicle. It's like a vase or vase, as some might say. But bars, anyway. But sorry, it's a comedy I saw on TV years ago. It just popped in my mind. It doesn't matter what it looks like on the outside. What matters is within. And within that vase of, let's say, there's nothing in there, it's emptiness, which is nothing but potential. And it's about focusing on what's within, not the external. And people give way too much credibility or way too much focus on the external. And yeah, there's a war going on at this point in time, but that's for another topic, maybe next time. So anything to add to anything? This has probably gone.
Thank you.
That was fun. It's been too long. That was enjoyable. Thanks again, Linda, for the time. And thanks for everyone for listening in. And we will upload, I'll upload this one hopefully this evening. And we'll do another one next week. So thanks for listening in. Thanks, everyone. All right. Thanks, Linda.
Thanks.
Bye for now.